20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks, as always, for being here. It's been a hot second since I've had the opportunity just for me to kind of talk Packers with you guys. And I'm really excited about today because today's going to be a little bit of a catch-all. We've got some catching up to do over the course of all the things that have kind of happened over the last week and a half. Also, we had Matt LaFleur speak yesterday. I want to go over that. Some rule changes, want to go over that. And just kind of some things that I haven't had the opportunity to kind of dive into a little bit more. So we're going to kind of take today and use some of those topics that got brought up with Matt LaFleur and some of the rule changes and everything else just to kind of get an all-encompassing episode, just to kind of get us back on track with everything. And then it's going to be very draft-centric coming up in the next, 4 weeks or so. So really looking forward to that as well. Before we get into anything, I do have a couple housekeeping items I want to get to really quick. The first thing I want to do is shout out two people, Dusty Evely and Nick Schmitz, two of our podcasters over in the audio side of the podcast. You've seen Dusty here a little bit on the video side as well. Dusty Evely recently recorded his 300th episode. Nick has recently recorded his 200th episode. So I want to take the extra moment to shout out them and cannot thank them enough for all the hard work that they've put in for years now as part of this podcast team. This podcast would not be where it would be right now without either of them. So Nick, Dusty, thank you a ton. Also want to shout out our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Kyler Peters, Justin Williamson, Jonathan S, Q underscore 21, Rob Burns, Bubba and the Old Man, Craig Hansen, and 14-month Smile. Also brand new All-Pro member, Willie Winklestinkle. Willie Winklestinkle, what a name. Thank you so much for being an All-Pro member. Appreciate that a ton. If you have not checked out those memberships yet, make sure to do so. Now is draft time. It's a great time to get signed up. Extra members Q&As. We've got one coming up on Wednesday night. So today is a perfect day to sign up for a Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube membership. And if you can't do that, no worries whatsoever. Just like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. We always appreciate that a ton as well. A couple other things. April 17th, Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. You get tickets to the game. I'm going to put the link in the description today. You get tickets to the Timber Rattlers game, plus you get a live Q&A with not only me this year, but Aaron Nagler as well. We're both going to be there answering questions ahead of the draft. So if you want to have a really fun get-together Q&A before the Timber Rattlers game, Aaron Nagler and I plus get to go to a Timber Rattlers game, which are always amazing as well. This is a great opportunity to do so. I'll put the link for those tickets in the description of today's episode. Again, that is April 17th at the Timber Rattlers game. April 23rd, the night before the draft in Green Bay, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Hagemeister Park in Green Bay. I'm going to be hosting a live Q&A there as well. So make sure to get to that. It's a really great space. You walk in, you go right to your left, and it's a really cool space that we're going to be answering all of your Packer questions. This one's going to be me. I'm hoping some people from the podcast team are going to be able to show up as well and kind of join the fun. We'll maybe start with a meet and greet, get to a Q&A as soon as we can, and then I'll probably stay a little bit after, maybe get some drinks. I know Cheesehead TV is hosting an event after that as well. I might stay, not at Hagemeister, but at a different venue, might head over to there and check those guys out as well. That is, again, April 23rd, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. I'm also going to likely be doing a Saturday night event, just kind of finalizing the details of that. I will get you that information as soon as I have it, but keep Saturday night clear as a post-draft live, probably Q&A meet and greet as well. Really looking forward to that. And then I also want to just remind you, I am doing the Pack-A-Day radio show 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. That'd be a long time. 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday, 105.7 The Fan in Milwaukee. You can check that out on the Odyssey app or thefanmilwaukee.com as well. So make sure to check out that daily Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. All right, that gets us through our housekeeping items. Let's get to our main topics. I want to start with Jaire Alexander just for a quick moment. I know we've talked about Jaire Alexander a ton. I've seen a few comments lately. They've actually been kind of piling up a little bit about how when Andy talks about Jaire Alexander, he clearly wants Jaire off the team and he doesn't like Jaire. And if you're getting any sort of like frustration or different tone from me when I talk about Jaire, the reason that I maybe have come across that way is because to me, it seems very much like a foregone conclusion that Jair Alexander will not be a member of the Green Bay Packers this year. So like kind of going through these continued conversations, and I see a lot of people saying Jair's going to be back and so on and so forth. To me, all of the sort of breadcrumbs, puzzle pieces, tea leaves, whatever you want to call it, continue to point to Jair Alexander being somewhere else in 2025. I have not in any way, shape, or form slammed the door entirely. I would not be stunned. I've said this all along. I would be surprised. I would be very, very surprised if Jair Alexander is a Green Bay Packer in 2025. I did recently do an episode making the case for why Green Bay could and or should consider keeping Jair Alexander. So I've done that as well. But just to be totally transparent, totally clear, I really don't have a strong opinion on this one way or the other. I will tell you, I think the best case, and I've said this all along, for both sides is to go in a separate direction. I think it's time for Jair to get a new fresh coat of paint for himself. I think it's better for the Packers to get somebody in who is able to play a little bit more. It seems like there's been some frustration there. To me, it just feels like if Green Bay can get something in return, even if not saving the $17 million, I keep seeing people post the $7 million. It's not just $7 million. You save $7 million this year, you save $10 million next year. It is a $17 million savings in total. For me, that is probably worth it to move on. I would like to get something in return, whether that's a fifth, sixth, seventh, fourth, I don't know. I would like to get something in return. But just to be crystal and abundantly clear about this, if Jair is back, I will not have any major issue with that whatsoever. My just hope and my sincere hope at that time will be that he can stay healthy. And I've put together, like, I would not play him on rundowns. I would not make him a full-time player. I would not put him in the 4-3 defense. I would not put him in the big nickel. I would put him in the nickel where you've got three corners on the field. I would put him on dime, and I'd play him about 35 to 40 snaps per game, trying to make it so that he can make it throughout a season and really be a great pass defender. He's not a good run defender. Why put him in on rundowns? It doesn't make any sense. And you have guys that can fill that role incredibly well. So there's a way to get through this, I think, with Jair. And if that's the direction that they go in and Jair and the Packers reconcile, I said it on that episode the other day, the best opportunity for Green Bay to find a legit star, probably still this offseason, is by finding a way to reconcile with Jair, getting him back and having him play at the level that we know that he's capable of playing at, and hoping and praying that he stays healthy. So, I mean, both my kids have Jair Alexander jerseys. Like, I have no problem whatsoever with Jair if he's back. He's a really fun player when he's out on the field. He was the guy I really liked and wanted. He was one of the guys, I should say, I really liked and wanted in that draft. One of my favorite all-time Brian Gutekunst moves. So, no, I have nothing here against Jair. If he's a Green Bay Packer, I hope he's a first-team All-Pro this year. And like I said, if I'm leaning slightly in one direction based on the contract, I would say I think it's time to move on. I think it's better for Jair. I think it's better for Green Bay. But I think you can make an argument the other way. And if Green Bay does decide to go in that direction, it will not be of like, oh, what a huge mistake Green Bay is making, or I can't believe they're doing it. I will be totally understanding of why it would go in that direction if that's what happens. I just really, truly believe it is not going to go in that direction. And I do believe he's going to be playing somewhere else in 2025. As I've said all along, crazier things have happened. All right, let's get to Matt LaFleur and his comments at the NFL owners meetings. There was no real major takeaways here. There were some interesting moments. He was, of course, asked about number one wide receiver, right? Or number one weapon. And he was asked about Tucker Kraft and could Tucker Kraft be this? And in very, like, what is he going to say? Nope. Don't think Tucker Kraft can be that guy. It's like, yeah, I'm not going to rule anything out. And, you know, we feel like Tucker can be a big piece of this offense. And, you know, Josh Jacobs, and, you know, also said that their hope is that somebody in this receiver room steps up and takes that spot as well. And, you know, I like Wendell Ferreira, who does A to Z Sports. He's put, you know, hope is not a, you know, strategy. Hope is not a game plan, right? And I agree with him to some real extent. I do think that they need that field stretcher. I do think they have, and I've gone over this in the past, I do think they have good weapons on this team. Can they get them to fit in the right way to unlock all the doors that they need to unlock coming into this season, especially against good defenses, right? I think that's going to remain the question. How much does a better offensive line going from Josh Myers to Aaron Banks help that? How much does a healthy Jordan Love help that? If Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks can play back to what they were playing like at the end of 2023. How much does that fix it? There's a lot of questions that remain out there. And when do you get Christian Watson back? And what version of Christian Watson do you get? If he's pretty close to 100% by week 14, 15, all right, significant change as well as you're making your push towards the playoffs. I think there's a lot of different questions that are out there, but I do think that there are still some real legitimate questions as to how they're going to put those pieces together and do they need one more piece? And I think they're going to very much try to address that via the draft as well. Whether that's somebody who can come in and make an impact right away, I don't know, but competition is never a bad thing. Of course, they already brought in Mecole Hardman as well, who, as we talked about with Justice yesterday, based on the contract, is going to have to earn his way onto this team. It is no way a guarantee based on his contract that he got to come to Green Bay. The interesting part of that conversation is a player that he brought up sort of without being, you know, probed in that direction was Marshawn Lloyd. And I love that he brought up Marshawn Lloyd. I do think Marshawn Lloyd has the ability to be a game breaker. And that's not to take away from Josh. You want Josh Jacobs on the field. Now, I think they probably want to pare it back a little bit from the workload that he had a season ago. Not a ton. You're hoping that he can be out there. Your best lineup is with Josh Jacobs in it. But adding a different dimension to that running game and having a running back that can be a game breaker, a big play guy, that is something that I think this offense can use. And sometimes if you can't get maybe those big shots down the field, well, then how can you generate big plays in other ways? And through the running game is certainly one of those. And if Marshawn Lloyd and Josh Jacobs, and I look at the Josh Jacobs piece and say, take your worst run blocking lineman in Josh Myers, take him out, and now put Aaron Banks in, who quite possibly is going to be their best run blocking lineman coming over. That is a significant difference. And if all of a sudden some of those maybe, you know, situations where Josh Jacobs has to make a defender miss 2 to 3 yards in the backfield to get 3 yards on the play, if all of a sudden that first contact or that first player that he's trying to make miss is 3 to 4 yards down the field, and then that turns into a 15, 20, 25 yard gain or more, that has the ability to spark this offense in a significant way. Marshawn Lloyd, he was at times what looked like the best running back in training camp last year. Again, I think Josh Jacobs knows how to ramp up and probably wasn't trying to play his best football in training camp, right? He's a veteran. He's savvy. He knows all those tricks of the trade. But there were still times where Marshawn Lloyd in camp looked like the best back. That is noteworthy. And he is explosive. He's dynamic. And I do think he can bring a different dimension to this team. So I do think that it's sort of Moneyball-esque, right? Are they going to be able to create this big play wide receiver, you know, in a lab right now and be like, haha, we got this? No, probably not, right? They're probably not going to be able to completely replace Christian Watson. They're probably not going to be able to find a true number one wide receiver. But can they build it in the aggregate? More explosive plays from Josh Jacobs and Marshawn Lloyd. More explosive plays from Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave. Jaden Reed has that ability, right? Can you find a way to get a little bit more from Dontavian Wicks in that regard? Can Mecole Hardman or Bo Melton be somebody that is able to stretch the field a little bit with their speed? Can you build some more playmaking in the aggregate, even though you're losing some Christian Watson and there's probably not going to be a 1A perfect guy that you're bringing to this team that can bring exactly what you want? That's what's going to be on Matt LaFleur's shoulders to build that offense the right way. And then Jordan Love to carry that offense and make it into an explosive playmaking dynamic offense with him being the straw that stirs the drink, so to speak. So that's what's going to be the challenge. But I do love the fact that he brought up Marshawn Lloyd. He did talk about the tush push. We'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to the rules portion of it. He talked about Aaron Rodgers playing in Minnesota and how great of a story it would be, not really thinking about it all that much. And I agree with him. I think it's a great story. It would be great for the NFL, great ratings, great must-see content. You know, Rodgers versus the Packers twice, coming to Lambeau as a member of the Vikings. People are going to have differing opinions and some people are going to vomit thinking of it and not want to see that at all. For me, I think it's great cinema. I think it's phenomenal cinema. And I think, you know, for me, I love football and I love the art of football. I love the entertainment aspect of football. And to me, this is all of it. This is cinema. This is art. This is drama. This is good football. And I think it would make for really good conversation. I think it'd make for really good, you know, actually game day watching. I don't think it happens anyway. I think it's Much Ado About Nothing. There's still a little bit of that inkling there, but I think he ends up in Pittsburgh. It seems to be nearing that direction. And by the way, we still get Green Bay versus Pittsburgh this upcoming season, either in Pittsburgh or in Ireland. And that will be a very interesting game if Aaron Rodgers is in fact the quarterback. He talked a little bit about the new positional coaches, DeMarcus Covington, Sean Mannion, the new linebackers coach as well, whose name is escaping me for the moment. Is it Duggan? I want to say maybe, but either way, you know, obviously I had positive things to say about all of them. Said with Rebrovich, like there's difficult decisions to make. No major takeaways there. Did talk about Josh Jacobs' comments and just, you know, kind of, it sounds like he had a one-on-one or at least a conversation with Josh Jacobs of, I think probably just maybe how to handle those conversations a little bit differently moving forward. I think the great thing is, I think everyone understands that Josh Jacobs' head, mind, heart, all of it were in the right place, right? He wants the best version of this team possible. He wanted the team to go out and get a few guys, which every player on this team wanted the team to go out and get a few guys, be a little bit more competitive and have those players that they feel like they need to win a Super Bowl. You know, he wants to go out and help recruit and say all these things and get guys to Green Bay that can help them win a Super Bowl. Again, everything's in a good place. How it maybe comes across to maybe some of the other wide receivers of like, they're not good. I think that's something that probably Matt had just a conversation on. And again, I don't think there's going to be any locker room angst, frustration, anything that Josh has to smooth over whatsoever. I think it's a complete non-starter on that side of the conversation. But I think, you know, just Matt saying like, hey, we had a conversation about it and just kind of, you know, how to maybe handle those conversations a little bit differently in the future. Just more of like a PR thing than anything else, an optics thing more than anything else. But again, I don't think anyone's too upset with Josh Jacobs at the moment. Talked about the comments that Ben Johnson made, or at least was asked about it when Ben Johnson said that he liked beating Matt LaFleur twice. And Matt, in a very smart way, just chalked it up to, yeah, I think Ben's playing to the audience a little bit, which of course he was. You know, when you're trying to make a first impression, throwing the team's biggest rival under the bus, like that's just, it's a Mick Foley cheap pop if you're a wrestling fan, if you will, right? It's low-hanging fruit. It's easy. It's exactly what he was going for. I'm sure Matt LaFleur is going to keep it in the back of his mind. Just maybe a little bit extra motivation going against Chicago this year. But yeah, I think Matt was good to kind of punt on the question and not give maybe Chicago any bulletin board material in exchange for what Ben Johnson maybe already gave Green Bay. He also talked about some changes with their offseason program because of the draft being in Green Bay, just some logistical issues where they're going to have to do a portion of the offseason program virtually. I am intrigued to see if they're going to have, because usually it's the draft and then not the, obviously the same weekend, but the following weekend is rookie mini camps. And so those rookies are in a week later. And I'm very interested to see if that's still going to take place or if that gets pushed out a little bit. So that'll be one interesting aspect of it. My guess is they're still going to be able to come and practice a week from that time frame, but that will be one other interesting aspect. But it does sound like there are some logistical changes and some you know, virtual offseason program because of what's going on with the draft in Green Bay. And then last but not least, from a LaFleur standpoint, he talked about Luke Musgrave staying in Green Bay this offseason, putting on some, you're going to love this, functional strength, and putting on some muscle, some size, and really kind of hoping that, I think Musgrave's hoping to start the offseason strong. He has not been healthy in any of his offseason so far. If he can be healthy and he can get bigger, stronger, faster, that's the Luke Musgrave that we need to see. As I've talked about a couple times in the past couple weeks, the idea of Luke Musgrave has been far better than the actual Luke Musgrave out on the field. They could really use that second tight end. They could really use a dynamic two tight end set. We're already seeing Tucker Kraft come into his prime. If Luke Musgrave can become the tight end that Green Bay, and I think a lot of us thought he could be coming out of college, that unlocks something in this offense that they've been missing. And that two tight end set has a real opportunity to be one of the really unique formations and sets that Green Bay can use in 2025, which would be a little bit different. First of all, Musgrave and Kraft have barely been healthy at the same time. It's usually one of them that's been hurt over the last couple of seasons. But also when Musgrave has come back, he hasn't made that impact that you would like to have seen. And therefore, we haven't seen a lot of those two tight end sets. Hopefully that's a formation that Green Bay can use more and it can be a big time formation going forward for them. But that's going to be really dependent upon the tight end that Luke Musgrave can become. And hopefully that offseason work that he's putting in pays off and he can be that guy that we all hoped he could be when they drafted him in the second round a couple of years ago. One of the other things that Matt brought up that I wanted to kind of go over in a little bit more detail today was Jordan Morgan. It's on the thumbnail today. That's why we're going to talk about it. But not only did Goody talk about, you know, Jordan Morgan's going to get a chance to compete at left tackle, Matt made it seem much more of like, yes, left tackle, it's going to be Rashid Walker versus Jordan Morgan. I still believe that we're going to see these pieces maybe move around a little bit. And I think Jordan Morgan is still probably going to get some time competing at right guard with Sean Ryan and at left tackle with Rashid Walker. If I had to guess today, if I had to just say who's your starting lineup week one, my guess is that it's Rashid Walker, Aaron, assuming everyone's healthy, of course, knock on wood, Rashid Walker, Aaron Banks, Elgton Jenkins, Sean Ryan, and Zach Tom. But my guess is that just like we've seen in the past, Jordan Morgan is rotating in with somebody. And the question to me is going to become, does he rotate in at left tackle with Rashid Walker? It's a little bit more interesting at left tackle. Now they've done it, right? Rashid Walker, Yash Nyman, they have done that. It is the blind side, so you have to be maybe a little bit more careful. But if they're both ready, they both are competing well, maybe both of those guys play half the snaps. And guess what? When Rashid really broke out in the end of 2023, it was sort of mid to end, he was competing with Yash Nyman. Yash Nyman was starting to get more snaps from Rashid. Rashid stepped it up. Rashid took the job over, and Yash basically got benched the rest of the year. And that was when I thought Rashid was playing his best. So I think they want to use Jordan Morgan to really push Rashid Walker to be the best version of himself. And I think that best version of Rashid Walker is still a legitimate starter in this league and even potentially a good starter. I'm not willing to give up on Rashid. I think he can be the starter for this team. And I think he will be the opening day starter for the Green Bay Packers at left tackle. And I think that Sean Ryan has really earned a lot more respect from the Packers coaches and potentially just being that guy at right guard as well. And I'll just say this, like the immediate then reaction is like, well, Jordan Morgan's just a bust. He is going to be a starter probably this year at some point, whether it's sooner or later, I don't know, but you are going to have injuries that pop up. The other thing is he's for sure going to almost assuredly be a starter in 2026. And you look at some of the players that they're potentially going to lose. I would expect Jordan Morgan to have a very big role on this team for the really foreseeable future. And I think he has the ability to be a good to maybe even really good offensive lineman in this league. If it's not right away, and if it ends up being Walker and Banks and Jenkins, Ryan, and Tom, not the worst thing in the world. They're going to need all of those guys. And by the way, I'm all for continuing to draft more offensive linemen. You just can't have enough of them. And to me, the idea of starting, if Jordan Morgan wins the left tackle job, of trading away Rashid Walker, complete non-starter for me. You go again from having good, you know, maybe a good depth piece along the offensive line to a potentially barren position, depending on what they do in the draft or if they pick up any, you know, veterans here. But to me, this is a offensive line that's in a good spot, and you have six starters, and maybe they can even find one more, whether it's via development internally or via draft choice, we shall see. But you've got six starters right now. That's a good spot to be in. Quite frankly, I would like seven. I would like one more rather than one less. And we have all seen the seasons, whether it's been Byron Bell or Jason Spriggs or Kyle Murphy or Alex Light or any of these guys where they're in and it's just a turnstile and you can't do anything and you can't pick up the blitzes and you can't, you know, just block the four guys in front of you and you can't run the ball because this one guy can't block. It ruins everything. I don't want anything to do with an offensive line that doesn't have any of that depth. And you, by the way, like, I don't think you get a third round. Maybe you get a third for Rashid. I think it's probably more of like a fourth, quite frankly. And I think you probably get a fourth in the compensatory pick. Now, it's a little bit different, of course, because then if you get the fourth in the compensatory pick, then you can't spend in free agency because it could counteract that fourth round pick and then you don't get it, yada, yada. So I'm not saying it's nothing, but I'm more willing to take my chance with him as the offensive lineman this year, even if he's the swing tackle, even if he doesn't play as much. By the way, if he does not win that job, guess whose value just went down in the trade market? Rashid Walker. Some team will still be interested, no question about it, but his value probably does go down a little bit if he does not win the job. I just have no appetite for it whatsoever. Keep Rashid Walker. You're going to need the depth this year. If like you can't have it both ways in which you want to see this Green Bay team go out and compete and try to win Super Bowls this year and also trade away your offensive line depth that is so incredibly important. Go back to the playoff game last year against Philly. You lose multiple offensive linemen. Jordan Morgan's already out. Josh Myers goes out. Jenkins goes out, I think. I think it was another offensive lineman that went out. And all of a sudden, you're just at a massive loss. And you just can't block anything. And trying to go from Kadeem Telford to Travis Glover, and it was a nightmare. You don't want to be in that position. And you're going to need the depth through the course of the season. So I like the idea that Jordan Morgan can potentially be that super sub as well. where if your left tackle goes down, all right, bring in Jordan Morgan. Your left guard goes down, Morgan. Right guard goes down, Morgan. Right tackle goes down, Morgan. The only thing you'd have to switch up is if Elgton Jenkins got hurt at center. I would assume Ryan would move to center and Morgan would go to right guard. Just one little switcheroo in order to make that work. I like that kind of thought process and idea. Like I said, I'm even for Green Bay getting another potential top 100, top 125 pick in this draft and putting it, that investment even more into the offensive line. But I like where Green Bay's offensive line is at. And I like the depth that they have. Really don't want to mess with it. And I do like the fact that Jordan Morgan's going to get the opportunity to compete with Rashid Walker, because I think that's going to push Rashid Walker into being hopefully the left tackle that we think he can be in a really good starter in this league. Let's talk about the rule changes a little bit here. Love the new kickoff rule. They're going to readdress the onside kick. I'm not super worried about the onside kick. I don't want anything too gimmicky, but I'm open to interpretations of what they want to do there. But the big thing is that they moved the touchback to the 35-yard line. And I do not believe teams are going to have an appetite to just kick it into the end zone and have teams bring it to the 35. I mean, you know, Brandon Aubrey in Dallas is almost in field goal range at that point, right? I think we're going to see kickoffs. And I think we're going to see returns. Now, whether those can actually be dynamic returns, that remains to be seen. But I think there's going to be a difference between the teams that are getting caught within their own 25-yard line and teams that are getting it out to the 35, 38-yard line. I think that's going to be a big difference. So I'm excited. I think it adds another element of strategy on how you cover these kicks. And I think it adds value to special teams. And I think it makes the kick return fun again. So very, very excited about that. I hate that the tush push is not decided. I don't care. I do not care. Have the tush push, don't have the tush push, ban the part where you can push players, but you can still do the QB. I don't care. I don't want to hear about it anymore. I hate that Green Bay's name is attached to it. I don't want to hear Green Bay's proposal of blah, blah. I don't care. I hate the optics of it. It's cringe. I don't want Green Bay's name attached to it. I just want the whole thing done. My skin crawls from the Packers have proposed banning the tush push. It's a play that's not fun. And the only thing that's worse than it is the conversation surrounding it. There is more time, effort, and energy spent into talking about the tush push. Like, if everyone spent as much time just trying to figure out how to stop it, we would probably be in a position where teams stop running it anyway. Like, I'm just done. I don't care. Whatever you decide to do, just do it. Now they're pushing it out until May. I hate that aspect. I wish they just would have decided it one way or the other. I like the new overtime rules where both teams have the opportunity to get the ball. And I do think this adds some strategy. However, it's a 10-minute overtime and you do not get to extend time. So in a theoretical world where some team would drain 9 minutes and 48 seconds off the clock and then kick a field goal and leave only 5 seconds left, you kick off, that team only has 5 seconds or whatever left, right? So that's an interesting aspect of this. You could theoretically run down the entire 10 minutes and the team does not get a rebuttal then. So you end up in this unique situation. Now, 10 minutes is a long time, right? They're not a ton of these 10-minute drives, especially because you still have a 2-minute warning in overtime. Both teams get 2 timeouts. It's tough to run the clock in its entirety out in that situation. But you could maybe usually make an argument that you want to kick first to see what the other team does. If you can pin them deep and they have to punt to you, you might get an easy field goal for the win. But more importantly, you kind of want to see what they did first. Did they not get any points? Did they kick a field goal? Did they get a touchdown? Did they get a touchdown and a 2-point conversion? What do you need to do to rebuttal? But there is that thought out there that the other team could get the ball, run 8, 9, 9.5 minutes off the clock, kick the field goal. Now you're left with no time. So I think you kind of have to take the ball if you win the coin toss. But I think that's going to add some strategy. But I like this. It still, I think, is a little bit advantageous for the team that receives, but not entirely. I love strategy. I love strategy, and I'm very interested to see how teams play this. I think this is a good place to be. At least I'm excited to see how it works out. Maybe it doesn't end up perfect. I know people are traditionalists and don't like change and just wish it would have stayed. I like where this is headed. I don't know that it's perfect, and maybe it ends up, you know, flaming out, and they're going to have to change it again. I like where it's at now, and I'm interested to see how it works in 2025. They're going to have more assisted replay. I'm all for that. Try to expedite those replay assists as quickly as you can. And the eye in the sky usually tells all and just allows them to get to some of those solutions a little bit quicker, which I am all for. They did not change the playoff seeding, or at least they tabled it for now. I wish they would have been able to find a way to get that done. I understand the disagreement of, well, then the division still means a lot. You're still having the teams that you are competing with two times per year. It is six of your 17 games that are going in the division. The team that wins the division still gets a playoff spot no matter what. No matter what your record is, you're guaranteed a spot in the playoffs. I just think that the better team, regardless of division, deserves to be the team with home field advantage. You're not going to convince me otherwise. There's nothing you're going to do to convince me otherwise. So it's okay if you disagree. It's not really that big of a deal, to be honest. The best team in the best division is the one that gets the bye week. That's an important aspect. If you want to be the best team, go be the best team, and then you don't have to worry about the rest. But I do think, last year is a perfect example of, reseeding would have changed it. And I think teams like Minnesota and Green Bay deserve, because they're in a tougher division, deserved a little bit more credit than maybe a division that did not have a good division. And, Green Bay, Minnesota having a better record than some of those. I would prefer the team with the better record get the home field advantage in that situation. But doesn't matter. It's been tabled for now. We'll see if any changes go to that in the future. But for now, it stays the same. No change to the defensive holding and, illegal contact penalties. The Lions, or was it the Eagle? One of the teams proposed, I think it was the Lions, proposed that it would not be an automatic first down. I like the fact that they did not pass this one. I think it would have incentivized maybe holding and using some of that illegal contact a little bit more, which is what I don't think you want to see. And I do think there are some situations where, maybe it was a third and 25, but you held to make sure that they couldn't get past you, and maybe they would have got the first down in that situation. So I think that this needed to stay the way that it was, and I'm happy that it did. And then, as I mentioned, no change on the onside kick rule yet. They're going to table that and kind of talk about that a little bit more as well. Last but not least, the only other thing that I wanted to get to today was Malik Willis. Christian Watson's dad tweeted this out last week and said, "Packers Nation, maybe I'm still kind of new to the fold, being drafted in 1993, then following back closely after Scoot was drafted in 2022. However, why, oh why, are Packers fans and media folks even throwing around the idea of trading Malik Willis? Do these people just not like nice things?" And I responded to it. I said, here's, I think, what the thinking is. I think it's a fair question to ask, by the way. No issues with what he's throwing out there. Malik Willis was great for Green Bay last year. Played in four different games. Green Bay won three of those. The only one they didn't was the Chicago game at the end, which was a bizarro game. By the way, Malik got hurt in that game as well and was clearly not himself through the majority of the time that he was in that one. But the other three games, he played very well, led Green Bay to victory in all three of those games. And a backup quarterback is extremely valuable, especially one you can trust, especially one with some upside. And there is no real reason why you could look at Green Bay and say they should try aggressively to get rid of Malik Willis or anything like that. But a couple things, the way that these conversations and topics come about are two different ways. And part of it is people like me that are guilty of one of it. And the part of it is just interesting curiosity. We'll go over both of them. The first is that there are fans that ask the questions and wonder, all right, Malik Willis just went out and showed that he was maybe a starting caliber quarterback last year. Will some team have the interest, a la Matt Hasselbeck or, one of the Aaron Brooks, et cetera, have interest in trading for Malik Willis? And maybe Green Bay could get something really great in return. And we know that Jordan's not going anywhere. And yes, it's nice to have a good backup, but can you find that somewhere else and then get this really great draft pick or move up in the draft by trading Malik Willis? And would that be worth it? So there's inquisitive fans who were legitimately asking that question. And that's one way how this topic comes up, is then you discuss it. The other thing is that people like me are talking Packers 365 days a year. And one of the topics I usually do every single year is, who are the Packers that have trade value who could theoretically be traded? And Malik Willis is one of the names that I brought up in that situation for a couple different reasons. One is because that, you know, he did play well a season ago, but more importantly, and why this conversation makes sense and there's a logic behind it, and we've talked about this, of course, is because he has 1 year left on his deal. And you have to look at everything in its totality. Just like Brian Gutekunst, when he's looking at the draft and free agency, he's not just looking at 2025, he's looking at 26, 27, 28, et cetera. He's looking at the future. That's a great example of what you have to look at right now with Malik Willis. With Malik, you have 1 year left on his deal. And if I'm Malik, and if I'm his agent, I'm going to say, I want to go and be a free agent in 2026. I want to go and go to a team that is maybe drafting a quarterback or doesn't have a great quarterback situation. I want to go to a team where I think I'm going to have the opportunity to either compete or maybe get called upon at some point in the season because the starting quarterback just wasn't good enough. I want an opportunity to start in the NFL. And that is not an opportunity that exists in Green Bay with Jordan Love. So if I'm his agent and if I'm Malik Willis, I'm going to say, listen, I love my time in Green Bay, but when 2026 comes around, I'm sorry, but I've got to go find a team where I have a chance to be a starting quarterback in this league. And no one would blame him for that. And that is what I expect to happen. I expect him to sign with a team where he has a chance to compete for it. I'm not saying that Malik Willis is a top 32 quarterback. I think he's probably somewhere between 30 and 40, maybe 30 and 45, maybe 28 and 45. He's probably somewhere in that range, a bottom tier starting quarterback or maybe a top tier backup. But I think he's going to want to prove to the league and prove to himself that he can be a starting quarterback. And he's going to want to go somewhere where he's got the option to, or just the ability to prove that, the opportunity to prove that. So I expect Malik Willis to be gone, and probably not on some massive contract where you get a huge draft pick in return, probably a 1 year, you know, or like maybe a 2 year, $10 million deal or a 2 year, 20 if some team really thinks of him as a potential starter, but probably not anything exorbitant that gets you this huge comp pick. So the reason that it's a conversation starter is because you do have to sort of do the, you know, risk reward analysis or the you know, cost benefit analysis of at what point does it make sense to trade Malik Willis? On the one hand, you get 1 year of one of the best backups in the NFL. That's valuable. Even if it's just 1 year, you have 1 year of one of the best backup quarterbacks in the NFL who's on the up and up, who continues to get better, who now actually gets a full offseason in Matt LaFleur's system. There's a lot to like about the idea of that, which is great. On the other hand, you have 1 year of this backup quarterback who you're hoping doesn't even play anyway, and then is going to leave in the offseason next year, and you maybe get nothing in return if you're active in free agency. So you have to think of, like, what is the cost that it would take? What is the draft pick compensation, the trade compensation that would take for you to say, all right, yeah, we'll take that for Malik Willis? And that's all it is. It's an interesting conjecture. It's an interesting conversation. But the truth of the matter is this. In order for Green Bay to consider it, to even have the thought process of the conversation, it's going to take at least, at minimum, a top 100 pick. If some team's offering a fourth, fifth, sixth round pick, Green Bay just hangs up the phone and says, we're good. We've got a great backup quarterback. We'll figure out the rest later. If some team were to offer a top 100 pick, I think Green Bay would have to consider it and say, all right, is this something that we want to go down this direction? Rather than having 1 year of a backup QB, we get a top 100 player and we get a really cheap, young, talented player on a great contract. Is that a better decision for the franchise as a whole? And we can go out and sign a veteran QB to come in and be the backup. There's some logic in that. The non-starter of all of this is that Green Bay is not going to get offered a top 100 pick from Malik Willis. That offer is in all likelihood not coming. So it's much to do about nothing. It's a fun conversation. It's a great offseason topic. You can cover it and talk about it for a little bit. But that's the answer to the question. Because I know fans are like, can you get something big for Malik Willis? No, probably not. Probably closer to like a fifth, maybe a fourth round pick that some team would be willing to give up for 1 year of Malik Willis with maybe some upside as a potential starter. I don't think the overall, you know, evaluation of him is going to be all that different. Green Bay got him for a cup of coffee last year. Did he outplay that? Yes. Is he worth more now? Absolutely. Do I think they're going to get a top 100 pick? No. If they don't get a top 100 pick, it's just a non-starter. So guess what? Great news for everyone. Malik Willis is going to be your backup quarterback in 2025. Probably going to be gone in 2026. I've talked about, if I were Goody, I would look at an extension right now. Is there some way we can get you locked in to one more year? probably not possible. Like I said, he's probably going to want that opportunity, but I would at least have the conversation. But I expect Malik Willis to be your backup quarterback in 2025 and probably be playing elsewhere in 2026. Do not see any trade for Malik Willis coming up anytime in the near future. All right, that is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Always appreciate it. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk Packers 365 days a year. I'll be back tomorrow because we do it 365 days a year. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handel, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, Jake Conner, Carla Delgado, and Willie Winkle-Stinkle. I'm never going to get over that name. I'm going to laugh at this every single time. I will see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.